We'll call the meeting of House Local Government together. We ask Secretary to please call the roll.
Vice Chair Bertolio.
Here.
Vice Chair Cohenour.
Present.
Representative Bishop.
Here.
Representative Galloway.
Present.
Representative Gist.
Here.
Representative Gunderson.
Present.
Representative Cordum.
Here.
Representative Sprunger.
Excused.
Representative Zolnikoff.
Excused.
Representative Thane.
Here.
Representative Rexton.
Excused.
Representative Seekins Crowe.
Excused.
Excused.
Representative Lynch.
Here.
Representative Essman.
Here.
Representative Kearns.
Here.
Chair Brewster.
Here.
That is all, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have a quorum. We're ready to do business. A couple of comments before we start. If you have your phone, please make sure that it's silenced so it doesn't come off. If you need to take a call, please step into the hall. You wish to give testimony, make sure you've signed up in the hall or online. When you get up, please state your name and spell your last name for the record. And remember that all of your testimony is a public record. Today we'll hear House Bill 465, House Bill 483, and House Bill 534. So, there he is. With that, we open House Bill 465. A representative, if you'd like to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Carlin, K-A-R-L-E-N, and I serve Western Missoula, Frenchtown, and Huson. House Bill 465 allows building permit fee revenue collected by municipalities, collected by local governments, to be used for activities needed to review and actually approve building permits. And so in the bill, our page numbers might be different. So in Section 1, Part 2, little i, you'll see really the crux of this bill, which is that currently in statute, it reads that building permit fees can only be used for building code enforcement. Yet the result of that is that in order to actually review and approve building permit fees, cities, towns, some counties are having to use general fund dollars, use taxpayer dollars, because they have all the money they need for building code enforcement, but where there's a need is having the staff, having the resources to actually review and approve permits. And so what we're left with is essentially a backlog of funds that really can't be used the way that they most need to be used, which is to get these permits reviewed and approved. This way we can get homes, we can get businesses built faster. And the next change in this bill is that it allows local governments to keep building permit fee revenue for up to 36 months. And this change is because when, you know, housing goes in boom and bust cycles, and so this allows local governments to, as they're, you know, hiring people, as they're planning and projecting into the future, that if there's an economic downturn, they're not forced with having to lay off staff. So it just provides a little more stability. And so on that, I will turn it over to proponents and opponents, and we'll just close in that I think this is a simple change to statute that will result in developers being able to have their permits approved faster and have Montanans be able to get into homes, have businesses be able to open in a far more efficient, predictable way, and reduce the taxpayer having to fund building permit, the approval of building permit fees when we have all this building permit fee revenue essentially sitting there unable to be used. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
All right, thank you, Representative Carlin. Are there proponents in the room?
Chairman Brewster, members of the committee, Thomas Jodin, J-O-D-O-I-N, Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Montana League of Cities and Towns, and we do rise in support of this bill. As the good representative explained, it does three main things. It expands the permissible use of building permit fees. That's the change on page 2, lines 23 to 24. Currently, those fees collected can only be used for building code enforcement. As I'm sure you're all aware, there is much more than just state building codes that need to be reviewed with new development, whether that's commercial or residential. There's zoning, there's infrastructure review, and with cities and towns, the building permit is the trigger and the administrative function that all those reviews take place under. But cities and towns cannot use the fees they collect for a building permit to fund all of the rest of the review, zoning, infrastructure, transportation, access, so on and so forth. So this would allow the use of these fees to be used to anything related to that development activity. The second change is increasing from a 12-month to a 36-month reserve. The good representative mentioned layoffs when there is a downturn in the development cycle. It's often folks in the building permit and building plan review inspection divisions within cities and towns that are let go. But also when the cycle comes back up, cities and towns are behind and they have to wait until they get the resources back up to hire people. And meanwhile, the boom is already taking off, slowing up the review and processing of applications. The third change on page four, lines four and six, tweaks the authority of the Department of Labor and Industry. Currently, their rules require cities and towns, or I should say certified local jurisdictions that have adopted the state building codes to submit materials for an audit. We're proposing changing that so that the current single audit under the Department of Administration reviews to make sure that the fees are collected, used appropriately, and have been adopted according to the required processes. We will have an amendment working with Department of Labor and Industry clarifying that they still have the authority to review local certified jurisdictions for compliance with the state building code to make sure that they're not adopting any codes above and beyond what the state has required. With that, we do stand in support and stand for any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Joden. Are there other proponents in the room?
Chairman Brewster, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R-S-T-A-G, here on behalf of the City of Missoula. I won't repeat the points that were made by prior proponents, but this bill would add flexibility for city planners in using these fees within the confines laid out in lines 21 and 22 of page 2. Within the confines of being necessary, reasonable, and uniform, this would allow them to plan further into the future and make sure that we're adjusting along with the rate of inflation as we do with other city fees. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. Other proponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Robin Turner, R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R, here on behalf of the City of Whitefish. For the reasons already expressed, we are also in support of this bill. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Other proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jake Brown, B-R-O-W-N, here today with Shelter Whitefish, a nonprofit with the mission of advocating for solutions to Montana's affordable housing crisis. We, too, would rise in support of House Bill 465. This bill just gives our cities a little bit more flexibility to get these building permits approved. It's going to cut through some of that local bureaucracy, and it's just going to help us build housing faster, which is what we need right now. So we'd urge you to pass. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Mr. Brown. Other proponents in the room? Other proponents? Do we have proponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nugent, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Mike Nugent, N-U-G-E-N-T, and I'm the vice president and managing broker of a large real estate brokerage across Montana. I've worked in the housing industry for over a decade, and I'm also serving my first term on the Missoula City Council, so I've experienced seeing this process from different angles. Currently, cities have building permit money available that could be used to approve permits faster, but red tape at the state level is preventing efficient use of those funds. Missoula, for example, has not increased building permit fees in over 10 years. However, the cost of the cumulative effort to approve building permits has increased over that time frame. That's left taxpayers to subsidize the true cost of issuing building permits and inspection and compliance activities because of those current regulations. This change will have a positive impact on the development process in communities across Montana by giving local governments more flexibility to hire planners and work through any backlogs without increasing property tax burdens. adding activities in support of reviewing and issuing a building permit to the allowable uses of building permit fees is a more comprehensive picture of what goes into actually approving permits in a timely manner. The many divisions that must sign off on a building permit generally do so quickly. However, given the flexibility to support a planner position with these fees should ease any bottlenecks and speed up the rate at which our hardworking builders across Montana can deliver homes and businesses for Montana's waiting and ready. I'd strongly encourage you to support HB 465. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Nugent. Other proponents online? Ms. Kelly, no, Adam, Mr. Hertz, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Adam Hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, in Missoula. I'm a realtor and real estate developer, former city council member and state legislator. I was also a member of the governor's housing task force, and I don't want to rehash a lot of the great points that have been made already, but I will point out that this bill is one of the appendix recommendations in the local issues. It's a A2 recommendation, A2A. It's a great bill. Just want to say in terms of kind of how this works on the ground, I can give you a real world example. In the city of Missoula, most of the time when we apply for a building permit, electrical, plumbing, building plans are reviewed pretty quickly, sometimes a matter of hours. But oftentimes the review sits in planning for not weeks, but months. And so this change would allow the city to reduce that bottleneck by hiring planners with building permit review fees. It should speed up the process and bring more housing to fruition more quickly. I would urge a do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hertz. Other proponents online? Just Ms. Fust? Would you like to go ahead?
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, Chairman and Committee. I'm the building official for the City of Billings, Jessica Fust, F-U-S-T, and I just want to speak in support of the amendments. I did submit written testimony, but the main issues that we have ran into is really the budget reserve and being able to plan for the future, especially with large projects. We collect fees up front, whether it's the plan review or the permit fees, and then projects may continue on for multiple years. So for us to be able to plan ahead for additional fiscal years, to make sure that we have the staff available to provide all of the inspections that we need, that is really important for our division. And then further to have that flexibility to fund other reviews, whether it is utilities, engineering, planning, those do seem to be the disciplines that hold up permits for us and not the actual building plan review. So I just want to speak in support of this. I think it's the proposed amendments are really going to help the efficiency and effectiveness of our building code programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fuss. Any other proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there opponents in the room? Seeing none, are there opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
There is one opponent.
Pop up there.
Chairman Brewster and representatives of the committee, my name is Aaron Bowman, spelled B-O-W-M-A-N. I am the building official for the city of Missoula, and while I work for the city, I would like to make it a record showing that I am testifying as a citizen, not as an employee of the city of Missoula. One of the things that I wanted to touch base on here that I feel like many of the proponents are stating is that planning and engineering and all of these other divisions are reviewing building permits for building code, which they are not. The building code fees are for specifically reviewing for the state adopted ICC codes. If these other divisions are looking to increase their employment or their staff members, they should be and have the power to increase fees for their specific review processes. They should not be coalescing their reviews with the building code funds. Those building codes funds are specifically dedicated to the review of ICC codes, not for planning or parks and rec or engineering. So I would urge the committee to vote no pass on this, and I am available for questions also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. So I'll ask again, are there other opponents in the room? Okay. Do we ask online? Did we have opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there informational witnesses in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Copeland. That's C-O-P-E-L-A-N-D. I'm the Bureau Chief for Building and Commercial Measurements, part of the Department of Labor and Industry. We are responsible for adopting and administering the building codes and providing oversight for local certified building codes. And I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Copeland. Are there other informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none. Are there informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll move to questions from the committee. Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Bowman, please.
Chairman Brewster, Representative Gist.
Yeah, can you help us understand a little bit what kind of money we're talking about that's in these accounts, and just kind of expound a little bit more about what is it you said that they cover the ICT 9 codes? Can you explain that to the committee, please?
Yes. Specification? Are you looking for like quantities in these accounts?
Mr. Bowman, when you go to speak, you have to talk to the chair.
Oh,
Mr. Chair, and then.
Yeah, follow up here, Mr. Chair. That would be these accounts. It sounds like there's an extended amount of money that builds up in these. I was just wondering what that reserve might be. And then the second part of the question was, can you explain to the committee what exactly the ICT codes entail, not specifically, but just generalization?
Yes. The building codes funds, I can't speak to other jurisdictions. I know that that the city of Missoula's current value is approximately 1 year's worth of operating expenses. Fiscal year 2022, we operated in the red for approximately $120,000, and we are on course to operate further in the red for fiscal year 2023.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, follow up. Just the explain what the enforcement, where you do the building codes. Can you just touch on what that entails?
Yes. So the
through the chair, please.
Oh, sorry. Chairman Brewster. The process of the review for the building codes is we take the application for the structure itself. So ICC codes only cover the actual structure of the building. So we are looking for foundation work, you know, the general structure, the electrical, the mechanical, the plumbing. That is what the ICC codes cover. And that is why I'm saying that the funds for the building department are only for the structure, not for the sidewalks, the land zoning, those types of things.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Other questions from the committee? Representative Bishop.
Thank you. I think question for Mr. Hertz, please.
Mr. Hertz. Are you still on, Mr. Hertz? All right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Hertz. Mr. Chair, I wonder if you could just address this question, particularly because it sounds like the governor's task force had looked at this issue in particular, and I'm just hoping with the various hats you have worn and wear now, if you could shed a little light on the ability of other places within the planning process for fees to be levied that could cover some of this, and how it was that the task force came to the conclusion that this would be a good path.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop, I don't know how intelligently I can speak to the inner workings of the accounting in the process, but what I can tell you is that this recommendation came from conversations with the head of Missoula Development Services, who kind of runs the umbrella of permitting, engineering, planning. And it was a suggestion that she made to me that she thought they could speed up review processes and run a better, more efficient process if we made this change in state law.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hertz, just with your experience of looking at where fees are levied, can you see how else would the ability to help subsidize some of these other aspects of the review process, or I guess subsidize isn't the right word, but just provide the right capacity to them? What other kinds of fees do you think get levied that could possibly go towards this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop, I would imagine if the planning department needed more funding, there would be, or engineering department for that matter, that would have to come from property tax increases from the general fund, or perhaps, and I don't know if this necessarily comports with state law, maybe they could raise subdivision review fees or something of that nature, but essentially they would have to have somebody else or some other activity subsidizing this activity, which is that, I know that they're certainly not as involved in the process as somebody reviewing the building permits, but they are a bottleneck in the process and they don't appear to have the funding to reduce that bottleneck. So it would have to come from an external process of some sort. Most likely that would be increase in property taxes, as best I understand it.
Great. That's helpful. Thank you.
Representative Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Nugent, please.
Mr. Nugent.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nugent. We've heard some testimony about whether or not there would be sufficient funds in reserve accounts presently in order to accomplish some of what's contemplated in this bill. Based on your experience on the City Council, number one, do you see that we are accumulating reserves as a result of fees collected? And number two, do you anticipate that having greater latitude in the use of those fees would in fact enhance the process of approving new development? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll answer your second question first. I do think that the flexibility in fees would improve the approval process and allow us to get housing into our needed markets faster. To your first question, I do think that there are fees in our reserves available, and part of the reason for that, especially now, is we're coming off a three-year cycle where building has been very heavy, but projecting fees and things like that, you can't necessarily plan for boom and bust cycles. You have fees that are set, and like I mentioned, Missoula hasn't changed theirs in over a decade. So there'll be some times where you're putting more into reserves than others, which those of you who have run a business like I have recognize that that's it's important to kind of build reserves. But I do feel like there's enough to both do the reserves and to accomplish this goal and give flexibility to communities. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nugent.
Other questions? Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be for Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan.
Chair members to Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Can you kind of elaborate on, I see that we're moving the time in force from 12 to 36 months. Can you explain why that 12 months would slow up the process?
Sure. So we've talked, Chairman Brewster, Representative Lynch, we've talked a little bit about it. So 12 months right now, you can only have a reserve of 12 months. So it's a very limited amount of money that you can keep on hand in order to staff building officials, plan inspectors, for purposes of building the international code compliance. You can't hire two or three or more, whatever a local jurisdiction needs, with only a 12-month reserve from the building fees. They would have to find those fees from somewhere else, probably the general fund, which comes from Chair Representative Lynch from the taxpayers in that jurisdiction. So they would be subsidizing when the boom comes in, they would be subsidizing the review for the flood of development coming in. And so with a 36-month, it gives a little bit more cushion to hire additional plans inspectors, building inspectors, but also speaking to the additional duties, which this bill would expand the permissible uses, allow planners and engineers to also perform more expedited review of building permits. Because when you apply for a building permit, it's not just the codes, the international building codes that you're applying. It's the local zoning, planning, infrastructure engineering review that has to take place. And those positions generally don't just do this sort of review. Their day-to-day job also includs, you know, their general planning functions. You know, they're writing growth policies, they're writing zoning ordinances, they're visiting with property owners about potential projects, they're reviewing subdivisions, they're reviewing annexations. So increasing the fees that the planners charge doesn't necessarily tie directly to the work that they would do under this scenario.
Okay, any other questions from the committee? Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I would like to start with Aaron Bowman.
Mr. Bowman.
Chairman, Representative Galloway.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bowman, so could you help me understand when you file for the permit and you pay a certain amount of money, I'm confused if it's all going towards building code or if there's part of the fee that goes into another account, or could you just draw me a picture? I'm kind of slow.
Chairman, Representative Galloway, correct. So for the building permit fees, those are designated specifically for the review of the ICC codes that the state adopts. Other groups such as planning, engineering, parks, whatever the gambit is, they also review on the building permit, but they are not they are not reviewing for ICC codes. They are reviewing for local codes, and they do have the ability to tie a fee onto the building permit that is specific to their work. They do not have to utilize the building codes fund to do their work. They do have that option.
Follow up. So I guess typically right now they don't do that. And so where does their funding come from? Out of the general fund currently usually, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway, correct. About 50% of divisions such as planning and parks, those types, those come from fees that they do collect. The other 50% comes from the general fund for taxpayer dollars, and that's because most of their work is community-based. It's sidewalks that the entire community uses. It's zoning that benefits the entire community. So that is why, at least from my opinion, why they are subsidized by the general fund. But yes, they do have the ability to add a fee onto a building permit for theirs.
Follow up. So can you explain to us what, since there's a 12-month period specified in code now, what happens to those excess fees?
Chairman, Representative, if there are excess fees, I would defer to Mr. Copeland.
Thank you.
We will re-refer. Mr. Copeland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway.
So, Mr. Copeland, my curiosity is what happens to the fees at the 12-month period if there's an overage in that account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway, the structure for local certified jurisdiction building codes programs is similar to the state's. And so I'll speak a little bit to both at the same time. The state is allowed to keep 2x appropriation, where a local government is only allowed to keep 12 months. At the end of that 12 months, if that money has gone over that 2x appropriation, a fee reduction on the building permit fees needs to be added in, and a plan needs to be put into place of how we can keep that money in that account. The intention of that fund is strictly the building permit fee, not the review of zoning and planning are specifically required to be separate from building.
Follow up. So are there any rules in place to put the dollar values to these fees? It seems to me that if we did this, there could be an end run to increase fees substantially.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galloway, that's always a possibility with this. The reason specifically that there has been a cap, both for the state and for local jurisdictions, is to ensure that building permit fees were only used for administering building programs, and so that money wasn't just collected as an additional tax, and then fees could be increased as necessary. The law, MCA, specifically requires that fees shall be commensurate with the cost of providing the building code permit, and that includes the plan review and inspection and handing the building permit, or providing for that. Excuse me, I'm drawing a blank on language.
Follow up.
Okay, one more.
Only one.
Only one.
Jeez, you're stingy. Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland, I shouldn't be joking. I forgot my question. How many years has this statute been in place, and do you see merits in changing that, if it's been in place for, I don't know, how long?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway, just a second here. I don't remember exactly how long that has been in place, but it's been a very long time. I've been associated with building codes for 10 years, and it was there long before I was. So the issue, the second part of your question was, do I see an issue with it? From the responsibility that the Department of Labor and Industry has to ensure, the whole reason why we have oversight over local certified jurisdictions is to ensure that we have a uniform building code statewide, a relatively uniform building code. And that's why we perform annual inspections, or annual audits isn't necessarily the right term. We do an annual review to ensure that all of their people meet the same qualifications that are needed to administer those plan reviews and those inspections, that their fees are commensurate with the costs. And so is there a potential for that to be an issue? Yes, because the construct of the building code was not intended to include zoning and planning, engineering, and those other services.
Let's try a couple more people, and then we'll get back to you. Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Copeland. So would you anticipate, if these funds were spent in some other manner, in some other way, and that fund got spent down, would you foresee any longer times in getting the building permits processed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gist, the part that's a little bit confusing about this is from this particular set of MCAs here that are being modified, these are the construct of the building permit and building permit application and that process. So a zoning permit and the plan for that, yes, that is a part of getting development going. But as far as where this is, it was intended to be, this is the building permit portion of it. So right now, I know at our level, we're able to maintain a reasonable amount of time to issue building permits. I would defer back to Mr. Bowman on the time frame it takes him to issue those. But issuing the building permit and the start of construction may be two different issues, because the building permit may be issued within a reasonable amount of time, but it's still held up waiting for planning or zoning.
All right, Mr. Chair, we refer to Mr. Bowman.
Mr. Bowman, we refer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bowman, would you foresee any delay in if the funds are spent down or spent elsewhere, would you still have the capital reserve to still meet the inspection deadlines that you are currently on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, if the building code fund is spun down or spent down, I would not have the funds to support my staff, and I would either be looking at layoffs or the general fund. The city would have to decide to provide me with additional funding from the general fund.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair. So it would have a very negative impact on building as it moves forward then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, yes, I do believe that it would have a drastic effect on the building review process. But I would also say that not having the funding to support planning and those other divisions is also an important thing, and that comes back to the fact that those individual groups need to have their own fees tied to a building permit so to support themselves.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Quarterman. Representative Quarterman.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Nugent, please.
Mr. Nugent, are you still on?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nugent, in your experience in industry and government, I was wondering if you could tell us what the public perceives these fees to be used for, whether they know they're for code review or for maybe the complete permit review. Can you tell us what your perception is there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I would say that the public's perception is they're getting a permit to have permission to build the building or build the house, and they don't necessarily recognize the difference between building code review, zoning compliance review, or planning review or anything of that nature. They are just getting the permit to build their project. And I recognize the concerns that some of the opponents have stated, but when we're looking at it, strictly from, I think, what the public has been telling us as elected officials and my experience in the private sector, it seems like we're splitting hairs and you pay a fee to get a building permit and that should cover all the reviews to actually get the building permit done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr.
Right,
Nugent.
Representative Galloway, would you like another go at it?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start again with Mr. Copeland.
Mr. Copeland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway.
So on another note, Mr. Copeland, we didn't really seem to touch a lot on page 4 of this bill, subsection 2.2. You know, it says subject to subsection 2B, so I'm curious what that means to you. And then further on, it adds the rules may not require an audit of a county, city, or town code enforcement program that is in addition to or separate from an audit conducted under 27503. Could you elaborate on what that means?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Galloway, that section specifically refers to the standard audit procedures that all local jurisdictions are required to work through with the state. That part essentially says that we would not perform an additional review or, excuse me, additional audit for financials. So we do have the capacity to still do the same thing, to see, to go through that functionality, to be able to see where building codes money is being spent.
Okay. One more.
Okay. One more.
So in the code, Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland, in the code, is there anything prohibiting folks in their community from adding this or that to their plan review fee outside of the code fee? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway, the term code, one thing to remember about the building code of Montana. It's made up of the law, the rule, and the adopted codes. The adopted codes are a standard. So in law, actually, this section that is being amended does specifically say that the money is to be used only for the building codes portions. As far as utilizing this resource to add additional fees, they would cover the zoning and the planning. That's absolutely possible, I believe. Mr. Bowman mentioned that too. I think that it would potentially see, if it was all included in one, you would have to see an increase in building permit fees.
Clarification.
Okay, one more.
So I'm just trying to make sure I'm following you. So they could, as the statute is currently, add additional fees outside of this fee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Galloway, yes, they can. It just needs to be identified that it's for the use of zoning, planning, or engineering and not for building codes.
Thank you very much.
All right. Other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Carlin, would you like to close on your bill?
I very much would. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll take a step back and note that we're in a major housing crunch right now, and developers are struggling to get their permits approved in a timely manner. We know time is money when it comes to building houses. And then we have people that want to purchase homes, and there's simply not the availability of homes on the market. Now, at the same time, the building permit fee reserve has been growing year after year after year, and we're subsidizing the activities needed to approve a building permit with taxpayer money. So we have money that could alleviate this big problem that we have, which is that we're not able to approve building permits fast enough. We have that money, but because of statute, we're not able to use that in the most effective way, which is to approve building permits, which is to I hate saying cut red tape because I feel like we've been talking a lot about that, but you know, I would say that this is cutting red tape when we have in statute something that says that we can't use building permit fees to approve building permits. I think that when people pay a building permit, they expect to be able to use that they expect that money will be used to approve the building permit, to review the building permit, and not to go to other stuff and be unable to be even used to approve that building permit. And so I also want to point out that on page 2, I believe in your version, it's lines 22 and 23, we don't say that building permit fees can be used for subdivision review. We don't say building permit fees can be used for a rezone. All we're saying is that in addition to the current uses, building permit fees can be used to approve building permits. That's all we're saying. And we have the money right there, and so this essentially unlocks money that's not being used to help get more homes, get more structures built and approved faster. And I think that this is an easy, no-cost way to make have a meaningful impact on our housing crisis and on having the state work with local governments by cutting this red tape. By taking an action that was outlined by the governor's housing task force, by unlocking this money so that local governments can help get permits approved and get houses, get businesses, get them built faster. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlin. This closes the hearing on House Bill 465. We'll let the people who need to leave, we'll let you out for a minute. All right, with that, this opens the hearing on House Bill 483. Representative Fitzgerald, would you like to open on your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, pleased to be here in front of the local government committee. My name is Ross Fitzgerald, R-O-S-S-F-I-T-Z-G-E-R-A-L-D, House District 17, Teton, Ponderay, and a little chunk of Lewis and Clark County, Mr. Chair. Basically, House Bill 483, as it says in the title, is just revising a few little items here, and it's a pretty basic ask. On the definitions on page 2, line 7, a one-time split means one division of a tract of record. A little note on line 24 defines remnant tract as a resulting parcel created as the part of one-time split. And in section 2, page 4, line 16 through 21 basically outlines the process. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll let the details unfold itself with the folks that know.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fitzgerald. Are there proponents in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matthew D. Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, first name Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W. I am a constituent to Mr. Fitzgerald's, a lifelong resident of Montana, the owner of a small surveying firm located in Shota, Montana, and I am a professional land surveyor. Through my firm, I've been involved in land transaction planning in rural Montana for the last 15 years. Most land divisions performed in rural Montana are performed for long-term landholders, planning for the transition of operations to the next generation of agricultural operators. Often my firm has been requested to perform simplistic parcel splits, including to split off non-production acreage. This becomes either an exercise in qualifying for an exempt division, or if an exemption is not an option, preparing a subdivision submittal to be reviewed by the governing authority. The submittal requirements, preparation time, cost to the landowner, and burden to the local government for this type of division are currently the same as a high-density suburban development. The net impact of these type of divisions are generally stated in the application for a subdivision as negligible, since they are only one additional parcel. The environmental impacts of these type of divisions are in the form of water and sewer, which is reviewed under the subdivision, under the Sanitations and Subdivisions Act. If wastewater facilities do not exist, the permitting agency reviews the parcel prior to the construction of wastewater facilities. This proposed exemption would provide an expedited method to responsibly divide large tracts of land and not be exclusive of family members. The proposed exemption must comply with zoning size minimums. The proposed exemption would specifically allow a landowner to divide a tract of record once. The proposed exemption must address access. The proposed exemption is subject to sanitation regulations, no different than a parcel created by other exemptions. This exemption allowing for a one-time split provides an expedited option for residents of rural counties to divide property with the proper amount of planning and local review. I believe the result will be better use of taxpayer money at the local review level and lessening the burden of full subdivision requirements. The subdivision review requirements are simply not appropriate for these type of property divisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Are there other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brian Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Association of Registered Land Surveyors, MARLS. I'd like to thank, I'd like to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill, as well as Mr. Morris for working as hard as he has on this bill. To kind of set the stage, I think that Mr. Morris set it perfectly. Price of property, price of housing in the state of Montana is pretty big right now. Now, one way to increase the number of housing units that are available throughout the state is through subdivision. Now, subdivision is expensive. Subdivision takes a lot of time. Subdivision takes a lot of review throughout every jurisdiction in the state of Montana. What we're proposing here is what we would think is a pretty limited additional exception for the state to consider that'll be in the hands of landowners throughout the state. That would be a one-time division of property. Both the remnant tract and the other tract would both be not subject to one-time split ever again. What that can do is really increase some of the housing and land that's going to be available in the state of Montana for housing. We'd ask you to consider this bill seriously and that you pass it at the end of the consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Are there other proponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adrian Cotton, C-O-T-T-O-N, here representing the Montana Building Industry Association, and we strongly support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cotton. Other proponents? Seeing none, do we have proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. Do we have opponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel for the Montana Association of Counties. So while not stated explicitly either in the text of the bill or in the proponent's testimony, this exemption is a reprise of the occasional sale. The occasional sale was removed from 763207, which is the one of the exemption statutes in the Subdivision and Platting Act in 1993 for its flagrant misuse. Exemptions under 763207 are meant to be the exceptions to the rule, and as has been practiced and demonstrated over the last definitely 30 years, exemptions have become commonplace. I will say that exemptions require very little planning. A person brings in an application, there's a review to determine whether or not the application is trying to evade subdivision review, and if not, it is taken before the governing body for approval. That's the limit of the review of an exemption from at the county level by a governing body. This bill tries to appease several issues. One is that there is a rule for access and that the parcels are not subject to further use of the one-time split exemption. However, there is the potential for use of other exemptions, such as the family transfer, which is also under 763207. So, for example, if the one-time split was used to divide a 20-acre parcel of land into two 10-acre parcels, each of those 10-acre parcels could then be split further with the use of a family transfer. So a 20-acre parcel becomes numerous parcels with virtually no review by the governing body for impacts, not only to water and sanitation, but to agriculture, to agricultural water user facilities, to wildlife, any of the criteria that the governing body is required to review a subdivision for. If one spouse holds title to one of those 10-acre parcels, that spouse could use a family transfer to transfer the parcel to either their parents and child, and the other spouse could do the same to their parents, with the only restriction being that their children can only receive one parcel. So if you only get one family transfer per county, so there is that limited restriction. Basically, this becomes a de facto subdivision with no review for impacts for public health or safety. So with regard to access, this bill does have that both parcels have to be accessible from a public road. And if there isn't a public road, as I read it, easements must be created ensuring access to both parcels. So this puts county planners in the position of determining what is a valid easement. Easement is not defined in state statute. It's defined in case law. So here's one definition. I'm reading from the Blazer case. An easement is a non-possessory interest in land, a right which one person has to use the land of another for a specific purpose or a servitude imposed as a burden upon land. There are two kinds of easements. There's one that's called that benefits a parcel of land. That's called an appurtenant easement. And there's what's called the easement in gross. And that easement in gross benefits the easement holder personally, but has no connection to ownership or use of a specific parcel. So stating that easements must be created to ensure access is problematic at best. The use of an easement indicates that the landowner, the person who's been granted the easement, can access the parcel of land. However, there's no indication that other users, such as emergency service providers, can use that easement. to access parcels as necessary. Easements also have no standards when it comes to things like width of the easement. There's no standards on what materials would have to be used to construct a road that an easement is used on. So while an easement may provide legal access, it doesn't provide any standards or guarantees of physical access. There's also talk in this bill about a remnant tract. Remnant is already defined in Montana law under the condemnation statutes, which is Title 70, Part 31, and it means a piece of property that has no economic value. So under this bill, it's being defined as the resulting tract from a one-time split, which creates conflicting definitions in Montana law. This also attempts to place conditions on the remnant tract. Exemptions can't be conditioned. There's no legal authority to do so. In fact, there's a bill that's working its way through the Senate this session that puts such a restriction on conditioning exemptions straight into statute. I mean, the language says you can't condition an exemption. What this bill tries to do is condition one exemption, again, creating confusion within 76.3207. And the conditions are being requirement for access as well as restricting future use of this specific exemption on the tracts of land created. Counties would honestly have no authority over what has been termed the remnant tract. So they would have no authority to create any conditions on that. They would only have jurisdiction over the tract created by the one-time split. There was some discussion about how this bill will help with providing property that housing can be created on. This bill creates pieces of land. These are pieces of land that have some legal access, but potentially could be inadequate. And it creates pieces of lands that don't have infrastructure on them. So those are all separate processes. So what this bill does is try to revive an exemption that was removed from statute 30 years ago and for a good reason. So I would urge this bill do not pass. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ali. Other opponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Chair Brewster and members of the committee. My name is Anne Schwend, S-C-H-W-E-N-D, and I am the Sustainable Communities Policy Director for the Montana Environmental Information Center. And I am learning, even though I was on planning boards for 13 or 14 years in both Madison County and Lewis and Clark, the Montana Subdivision and Platting Act is really complicated. And it's complicated for a reason, because we want to be thinking about how do we grow and develop and where do we do that. This bill, I stand in opposition to the bill because it further complicates it. And I think Ms. Alley did a great job of explaining some of the confusion with the law. But as I was reading through this, it is an exception or an exemption. And exemptions are, they create a problem because it's an exemption from review. The proponent said that it's a problem and that subdivision review takes a lot of work. But if we think about the way that subdivision review is set up in our law currently, we either have minor subdivisions, which is anything under five parcels, or we have major subdivisions. Review of minor subdivision parcels, in the statute, it states that the decision must be made by the governing body within 35 working days. I don't think that that's an unreasonable amount of time for that governing body to be really considering what are going to be the cumulative impacts of this. I know that that is a burden, and there's paperwork that has to be put together to figure that out, but I don't think that it's an unreasonable amount of time. One of the questions that I have, and we are seeing a couple of bills that are passing through the legislature now, are, so if you're going to have a minor subdivision, that means it's less than five lots. But the way that we treat minor subdivisions are based on whether that is a first-time minor subdivision or a subsequent minor subdivision. So if we're using these exemptions, do these parcels, even though they don't qualify for additional exceptions, are they then going to be considered, if somebody wants to come in and do further development, does that become a subsequent minor, or is that a first-time minor because you were using an exception? So I think what I'm trying to illustrate is it gets complicated very quickly when we are allowing these exceptions to get in place. And because I am someone who is very interested in water, as a water planner for Department of Natural Resources for 14 years, what happens to the water rights that are on that property? It is sort of spelled out in the Montana Subdivision and Platting Act. If you are doing a subdivision, it's not clearly defined in this bill as we are seeing it now. If there was an agricultural water right, does that water right get split between the two parcels and then they have to go through the change process? Does that remain on one parcel? What happens? What happens for the water that they will need for the subsequent homes that may be coming on that property? As Ms. Alley stated, there is already in statute the exemption to be able to split lots, to divide, to give those to your family members, each of your family members. I think that we don't need to be adding any more exceptions to our subdivision law, particularly when it's just going to be a minor subdivision. We urge a do not pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwinn. Are there other opponents in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Berg, B-E-R-G, and I'm a Park County Commissioner. The rules changed in April of 1993. We had a number of one-time splits at that time that are still impacting us in Park County. The one-time split may create housing in areas that will create public health and safety issues and strain local resources. Park County has several areas that are where there are 20 and 40 parcels created through Aliquot Division after 1993, before the change in the minimum size. These areas were created by the filing of deeds with no review for adequate access, fire, water, or any of the typical infrastructure needed for housing. One particularly outside of Livingston is the wine glass area. May I pass out some maps?
Sure.
There are numerous sections of land that were divided into Aliquot parcels by deeds before the change in law in 1993. The main access to the area, which is on the left side of your map, is through an area called the 5-acre tracks. The 5-acre tracks, county roads are very narrow. Basically, they were designed for buggies. It's difficult for cars to pass, let alone emergency responders. The wine glass area is mainly accessed by these buggy roads, and the parcels are located on the side of a mountain with steep, unmaintained roads. And as some of you may know, the wind blows pretty good in Livingston, so often access problems when there's snow and wind. Doubling the number of lots in the wine glass will create further access issues and limited accessibility for emergency response. We have attempted to create one-way roads in the 5-acre tracks to facilitate traffic with just a little bit of pushback from the locals. The residents of the wine glass have attempted to create a rural improvement district to maintain the roads. So far, that's failed. The language in HB 483 does not go far enough to ensure that there is adequate physical access to ensure public health and safety. If people do not have adequate access to these one-time splits, it will not create housing. Allowing one-time splits in areas that are already fraught with access issues that endanger public health and safety, or if there are wildfires or other emergencies, does not create sustainable housing for Montana. Cook City, Silvergate, in addition, the Livingston Peak area, result in occasional sales in an area that is not accessible during the winter months. In Cook City, there are numerous 10 to 20 acre mining claim parcels in the Lulu Daisy Pass area that currently do not have year-round access. These areas also could be further split with the occasional sale. This exemption would have the potential to create hundreds, if not thousands, of parcels in areas where services could not be provided with no review. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner Berg. Other opponents? Seeing none, do we have opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. O'Callaghan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sean O'Callaghan, O apostrophe C-A-L-L-A-G-H-A-N, and I represent the Montana Association of Planners. We are opposed to House Bill 483 as currently drafted. As has already been stated, this is an attempt to bring forward an exemption that is very similar to what was previously rescinded and called the occasional sale. This was rescinded in the early 90s due to widespread use that essentially resulted in unreviewed subdivisions. And that's what we would be in for again if this were reinserted into statute. House Bill 483 revives the problematic exemption while taking minimal steps to address the issues that resulted in it being removed from statute in the first place. As Ms. Schwinn pointed to, we've already seen several bills this session, many of which the Montana Association of Planners supports, that have passed will make it much easier for landowners to divide land. I'll just mention these quickly. Senate Bill 158 expands opportunities to use the family transfer exemption. Senate Bill 131 establishes a time frame for review of subdivision exemption applications and prohibits local governments from attaching conditions of approval. Senate Bill 152 would make more subdivisions first minor subdivisions, meaning they can take advantage of a lower burden of proof and a simplified review process. Senate Bill 170 would create an expedited review process for certain minor subdivisions. Together, these represent a significant opportunity for landowners to divide their land in an easier fashion. House Bill 483 isn't the right tool to do this. It circumvents the process entirely and is a step too far. As Ms. Alley commented previously, exemption should apply to a very narrow set of circumstances. That would not be the case with House Bill 483. The ease and likely widespread use of it without the responsibility to mitigate impacts to public health and safety would make this the go-to tool to divide a piece of property. It's only going to exacerbate the situation and ultimately increase the cost of development that would be passed on to Montana taxpayers. While we strongly oppose the bill, our letter did provide a couple options for additional sideboards that should be considered should the committee wish to proceed with this, making it apply to only the most rural parts of Montana, limiting its application to tracts that are 80 acres or larger. Like the current parameters for use of a family transfer exemption, the one-time split could be limited to use by individuals, that is not businesses or corporations, with one-time usage per claimant per county. And also the remnant parcel and one-time split parcel should be prohibited from making use of the one-time split exemption, which is already included in the bill, or the family transfer exemption to further divide the track. In conclusion, we should look to the past and acknowledge the problems with the occasional sale that were recognized by the courts, attorney generals, and the legislature, not repeat those mistakes. Simply put, House Bill 483 is the wrong tool at the wrong time and will produce the wrong results for Montana. We respectfully request a do not pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Callaghan. Are there other opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there informational witnesses in the room? Are there informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll move to questions from the committee. Representative Guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Byrd, in this map you handed out, I was just doing a rough count. I see where the roads are in red, and it looks to me like there might be 40, 60-plus properties that the roads don't touch. Would that be an accurate assessment?
That could be close. I myself live down near Gardner, Montana, but the five-acre tracts is area of common concern.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
How do those 60 people get into their properties?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, most of them access it via a road through the 5-acre tracts, which is the more densely populated area to the right on that map. There's another access, which is a much steeper road, so most of the traffic goes through the 5-acre tracts.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
So then would it be accurate to say that everybody has an easement going across other people's property to get to theirs with the way these parcels are all cut out? Or are there entities that own multiple parcels?
I believe there are entities that own multiple parcels. I can't speak to each individual parcel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, other commissions or questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Fitzgerald, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Certainly stirred up a bee's nest here. We went with the most innocent and simple approaches on this particular bill. And so please know that it wasn't there to disturb the entire state of Montana. We're talking rural areas, not the 10 major problem areas in Montana. So just to let that be sink in a little bit, I do appreciate Mr. Callahan's suggestion, as there was no other solutions offered by any of the opponents. So we will take that in hand and certainly research these other bills to see if we can satisfy the numerous and hundreds of rules that are now in place for, in this case, not a subdivision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
but appreciate just a consideration.
Thank you, Representative Fitzgerald. With that, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 483. We'll give a moment for the room to shift. All right, we'll move on to the hearing. Well, we'll open the hearing on House Bill 534. Representative Yakowitz.
Good afternoon, you hardworking Mr. Chair and committee members. I don't want to be too passionate here for a bill that I'm very passionate about. It's my name is Mike Yakowitz, Mr. Chair, and
spell your last name.
Y-A-K-A-W-I-C-H.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. I am from House District 51. I'm so excited to be here. I usually do a better job. I'd have to say that this is the apex of my career right here in city government, local government. Because 8 years I was in city council, and one of my friends who I can't say their name, but they are the chair of this committee too. So I'm so happy to be with him and all of you. So, what a great day and what a great view of campus we have here and how hardworking all of you are. And I appreciate that. So, the bill is House Bill 534. And I'm going to say it's my legacy bill, or another way of saying it, it's a tool to address blight. And the bill specifically is addressing cleaning up of nuisance properties. And you may say, Mr. Chair, how are we going to do that? Well, the bill is very simple in some ways. It addresses, it takes the cap of $9,500 to $25,000. And so you may ask, well, why? Why is that so important? Well, many of you know about buildings in your community that are dilapidated and need to be abated. And that was a big word I learned in city council, right? That it had to be addressed. It had to be maybe removed. So what we find in this bill here, what we find is that a lot of them, $95,000 and below, would go to municipal court. But if it's more than that, it would go to district court. And so what happens is things get bogged down. Things get slowed down, and efficiency is not achieved. So here, this bill, and I'm carrying it for the city of Billings, but I believe I'm carrying it for Bozeman, for Helena, for Weibo, Montana, for Libby, for every place in Montana. I'm carrying this bill to address a big issue that blight spreads. And if we can address it early on, we can have a healthier and happier community. So, Mr. Chair, I'm wrapping it up that we're addressing uncooperative owners, for example. We want to bring them to municipal court, but with their bigger level, we want to keep them in municipal court rather than district court, again, under 25,000. Therefore, because in district court, they want to deal with crime. They want to deal with a lot more. So a same issue that would go to municipal court would take maybe 2 years in district court, where in municipal court, it may take 2 or 3 months. So much more efficient to address these issues quickly. And all of you know with your constituents, right? Next, grandma is next to a house that's dilapidated, needs to be abated. It takes hours, takes days, takes months, takes years. People leave the community. People are disgruntled. It impacts everyone. So why not use this as a tool to be more effective and more efficient in addressing this right away? Mr. Chair, I have said way too much right now, but I could say a lot more. But I'm going to wrap this up with a closing. However, I'm going to allow proponents, Mr. Chair, or you will allow proponents, opponents, and any informational witnesses. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Mr. Yakovich, or Representative Yakovich. Are there proponents in the room?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'll try to bring my energy level up to match the good representatives. Thomas Jodin, J-O-D-O-I-N, Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Montana League of Cities and Towns, standing in support of House Bill 534. As the good representative explained, this increases the amount that city and municipal courts can consider the jurisdictional amount from $9,500 to $25,000. I think this is a good measure to increase the efficiency. Otherwise, as was represented, these cases where the city has an interest in collecting fees, assessments, or charges against a property owner, for whatever reason, those cases would otherwise go to district court if they're above $9,500. And when they go to district court, the cost of that is borne by all of the taxpayers in the county. And if we can increase the amount for city municipal court, it would just be the city taxpayers that are bearing the burden of that process. I will also point out that the underlying enforcement action with regard to blighted properties or collections, getting that property owner to fix it, and if the city has to go in and remove property and clean or remove buildings, clean it up, comes with its own due process separate from actually collecting the amount. I'll also point out, prior to coming to working for the league, I was the city attorney for Helena for about 15 years and engaged in these actions, and there are no collections per se. If the property owner, if the judgment in municipal or city court is against them, we would have to, and I'm going to stay away from the legal terminology, but ask the district court to attach that judgment to the property. So you're not sending a collections person after them for money. It's attached, the judgment's attached to the property, and you get it when the property is sold. The title companies pick up on that judgment. So with all of that, we would ask for your support and a due pass. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Jodin. Other proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Turkowitz. That's S-T-V-E, and Turkowitz is common spelling. Or T-U-R-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z. I don't know if you could have any more people to appear today with word and last names that need spelling, but thank you very much for hearing us. One of the things I want to, and I'm representing the city of Billings, one of the things I would like to point out, this does not interfere with due process. What this is saying is this judgment that the city has expended money to fix up boarded up windows, trash, junk vehicles, whatever, and has gone through it. It's administrative procedure. It's cleaned it up. It has gone to the property taxpayer and said, you need to pay this. And they said, not going to. If you want it, take me to court. Well, we will. We'd like to take you to court, but we want to take it to a court of local jurisdiction that has a maximum of $25,000, an issue that can be cleaned up in 6 months versus 2 to 3 years if we had to go to district court. So I'm happy to answer any questions, any specific technical ones. We have Mr. Jodin to do that, but we appreciate it. Do pass on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Are there other proponents? I don't see any. Are there proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there opponents in the room? Seeing none, are there opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, are there informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll go to questions from the committee. Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Turkowitz.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gist, Representative Gist.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair. We've got nuisance compliance officers in a lot of small towns across Montana, and many times they're the judge, jury, and the executioner for these complaints that are filed. How is this going to impact small communities where they get somebody that goes out and looks for a property, finds a property, complains about the property, assesses a fine on a property, and then says, oh, we're going to clean this up if you don't. How is that going to impact them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gist, I'd like to re-refer that to the attorney.
Re-refer.
Mr. Jordan.
Chairman, Representative Gist, so there's two steps to the process. The first step is you have your code enforcement officer out. They see an alleged violation, and then they work with their city or town attorney to bring an action in. I think the first place I would start with is, could we work it out with the property owner, explain to them what the problem is rather than just jumping straight to court and trying to get voluntary compliance? How can the city assist with that compliance? If it reaches a point where there's an impasse and the property owner is just not going to make the fixes that the city or town believes needs to be fixed, they will bring an action in city or municipal court, regardless of the amount. They don't know the amount yet. To force the property owner to clean it up or for authority to enter onto the property and do the cleanup. Once that has been accomplished, then the city or town has the cost of cleaning it up, in which case they will ask the court to impose those costs on the property owner. If it's more than $9,500, you have to go to district court.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Do nuisance compliance officers have to be licensed and bonded?
Yes, and they are generally covered under, at least if they're city or town and they're covered under the Montana Municipal Interlocal Authority, the city self-risk retention pool, they have that coverage through that organization.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, I guess first question is for Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan, you know, as I'm looking at this, we have the 9,500 struck out in favor of 25,000. In every instance, except for on the back page, that is, I'm looking at line 5 on the back page. Why is it not struck out in the last one and substituted?
Chairman, Representative Kearns, just one moment. I'm reading it. Representative Kearns, you know, I can't answer that, why that one was specifically left out.
Mr. Chair, can we re-refer maybe?
Sure.
Oh, never mind.
Who would you like to re-refer to? Sponsor?
Mr. Chair, sponsor.
Would you like to, Representative Jackowicz?
Mr. Chair, we intentionally did that for Mr. Kearns, Representative Kearns, because he is so amazing. He'll pick out. I would just assume, if I'm correct, we made a mistake, and we should have crossed that out. So, if that's true, well done, Representative Kearns. But my legal aid here is, if they don't have no answer to that. For the recovery of personal property belonging to the city or town, when the value of the property exclusive of the damages for the taking or detention does not exceed $9,500.
Representative
Kearns,
Mr. Chair, follow up for Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan.
Chairman Brewster, Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan, can you walk through the qualifications for a the different qualifications for a city or municipal judge versus a district court judge, as far as schooling, some of those kind of things.
Chairman Brewster, I will do my best, Representative Kearns. A city court does not have to be an attorney. The judge of a city court does not have to be an attorney. City courts are not of record, so that means their proceedings are not recorded, and everything that is appealed from city court that goes to district court is called, it's heard de novo. So a trial, do the whole thing all over again, not just a narrow appeal on a specific issue of interpretation of law. Municipal courts are of record, and the judges have to be attorneys.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Follow up.
So I guess my question has to do with, really, it comes down to the amount. I mean, when we have somebody who is being charged and, you know, they're looking at an amount of $9,500 versus $25,000, I guess my question has to do with that, you know, if the amount of kind of proceeding is really makes me nervous when we're going above maybe a $10,000 or $9,500 threshold, when you have somebody who is, one, it's not for record, and two, is not an attorney. Can you speak to that, please?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Kearns, I understand what you're saying. The city court judge is elected by the people, so I would suggest that, you know, it's a local issue if they are having problems with their city court judge. I know, you know, there are adverse parties on both sides to advocate, but ultimately the goal here is to try to avoid, and if we, I understand that we may have a disagreement, to avoid bringing these cases to district court where they most likely get put to the bottom of the pile after all the criminal law and dependent neglect child cases.
Other questions from the committee? Representative Thane.
A question for Mr. Jordan, please. Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan, do you have a sense of how many years have passed since that $9,500 figure was added to statute and or adjusted? Has it been adjusted periodically for inflation, Mr. Chair?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Thane, I was actually right before the hearing just checking with the city attorney in Missoula, who has been there since 1974, 75, 76, something like that. He's been the city attorney longer than I'll be alive. Let's just put it that way. and he informed me that it has not been changed for several decades.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr.
Jones. Go to Representative Essman next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably a question for Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan.
Chairman Brewster, Representative Essman.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jordan, is this a one-time thing, or could a potential person or property who's got this problem, could they get this fine more than once and then have the liens attached to their property so that they could accumulate $25,000, $50,000, $75,000 worth of liens on their property?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Essman, I suppose that's possible. Although for, you know, the example that's being used for this, once the blight on the property has been abated, I guess I would struggle to see that unless they, you know, restarted the blight in some form or fashion, it would start another enforcement action.
Thank you.
Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, question for Mr. Jordan. Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan, I just want to clarify maybe a statement I believe you made, that any appeals or law or enforcement issues would go back to the district court or the court of record. So is that correct? Is that what your statement was?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Kearns, yes. So maybe with a little clarification. So in courts that are not of record, city courts. If there is an appeal, if one of the parties disagrees with the city court judgment, they can appeal that to district court, and the district court is called de novo. The trial or the district court becomes a trial court, and they have a whole new trial. They start from the very beginning. If they're appealing from a court of record, all that the district court would consider is, you know, the transcript, the audio recording, and whether the judge in the lower court, the municipal court, made an error in interpreting the law. It would not, the district court would not be the fact finder and have a new trial.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, Mr. Joden. Sorry. It seems like a Billings boy bill. Is there any other cities that are interested in this legislation?
Chairman Brewster, Representative Galloway, yes. It has not been changed in a long time, and the other cities and towns are interested in it because it does provide that flexibility where they don't have to go to district court to pursue these larger amounts of fees that they have against a property owner. And I can't say, but it based on my professional experience with the city of Fallon, it's few and far between that we see these cases. But when we do see them, it feels nice not to have to bug a district court judge with a city issue.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Yakovich, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. So first of all, I apologize for the mistake I made in the bill. The buck stops here. And so I did not want to be cavalier. I apologize if I was. That mistake would hopefully be a friendly amendment among the body here. In closing, you asked some great questions. So is this a problem? I would be very confident driving around, and I've done a lot of sales around Montana. There's a lot of abandoned buildings or problem buildings, not only in Billings, in Bozeman, Helena, even in small towns, Laurel or even Cardin or wherever we go. I am sure maybe we may live in the upper areas of where society is, but sometimes we drive in a neighborhood and we'll find lower areas of the town where this is more impactful. So this, I believe, is a big issue overall. You ask also a great, someone asked a great question about process. I have been involved in a process as city council person where the code enforcement officers give many warnings, many, many warnings, and the judge gives them 30 days and 90 days. So I could only ask you to be aware of that if you haven't engaged in your own local city government and found out what code enforcement does. So it's not just a one-shot fine. They actually give them many opportunities to clear up their property and address it. So I do think it's important that we understand that there's no cost to our state. It will be a local issue. And anyone can go to district court or municipal court. So it's not like mandatory this bill requires them to go only to municipal court. They can anytime go to district court. I'd also just like to conclude that begging your pardon for that error in our bill, and hopefully that you would be able to resolve that. I have lived in the neighborhood in Billings on the south side where homes have been abandoned, where graffiti, blight, I could see literally how blight, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 2 years, graffiti goes onto trees. People start leaving the neighborhood. It's very, very impactful. For your constituents, it's very, very impactful, especially if you have areas of low income where that may happen more often. I also have seen the progress and how amazing it is when we do address it. I'm just hoping that this bill could be more effective and more efficient in addressing this more rapidly. And it's not a bully pulpit to pick on people, but actually to hold them accountable. A lot of them are landlords. A lot of them are rentals. And so in many cases, at least in Billings, where we really use code enforcement gently, But these are big issues, too, where we need to increase even like asbestos to abate asbestos and other things like that. So, committee, I really hope that you can think about this more. I really hope that you would consider it. Having this bill pass, you can think that this is a tool for your constituents. Whether it be small town Montana or big town Montana, this bill will be a tool to help progress your community in addressing a lot of these problems that your constituents face. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you so much for your patience and your time, and I hope you have a good afternoon and a good evening. I do ask for a due pass.
Thank you, Representative Yakovitch. With that, this closes the hearing on House Bill 534. Just a couple of things. On Thursday, we'll have three additional bills, and we'll try to catch up right till then with our executive actions. So even for those bills we hear on Thursday, Tuesday, which is probably our last day before we leave for transmittal, we have three bills and whatever shows up in the next 2 days, and then we'll do executive on everything we do that day so that we're all up to date. So I'm optimistic maybe that we might only get three more bills, but who knows? Could be a dandy day. So that's the plan for now, so try and prepare for it. It could be a late evening. All right. Thank you all. With that, we're adjourned.